you know, this critical social justice in education in our schools in the state of Idaho is very extensive, and it's been documented. School administrators in Coeur d'Alene actually took manipulated an 11-year-old girl into believing she was a boy in order to undergo gender transition surgery. The parents are now suing the Coeur d'Alene School District for doing this. And I hope they say it. Now, many people say, well, you're such a red state. How could these national trends of critical gender theory and queer theory and educational programs filter into our schools? Well, the reason for that is because the curriculums that are being adopted, the educational philosophies that are being adopted, various other organizations that are a part of helping school districts do their job.
Welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast, a podcast designed to coach you up in your faith. The more you know, the more you can grow. The importance of growing your faith is now more critical than ever, and this is why you should invite people to be part of the Salty Pastor Podcast. My name is Jesse Mayer. I'll be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the Salty Pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peake.
Hey, everybody. I'm so glad you're here. We're going to be finishing our series, and I'm feeling exceptionally salty today, so be ready. Like and subscribe. Help this platform grow, because we are a voice crying in the wilderness, it seems like, at times. I especially feel that way, digging into the research, doing the prep for this podcast today. So go on over to YouTube, look up Salty Pastor, and then click on the thumbs up, and then subscribe. That helps grow this platform. Or you can also share through Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever your platform is. Just share it with friends, you know, send it to them text, say, hey, check this out, see what you think. So let's be the Salty Pastor and the Salty Crew together as we try to exhibit change in this world and grow strong and courageous faith.
We are in our final week of our current study, Weeds in My Garden, an honest conversation on mental health. And when we started this series, we knew it was going to cause a lot of talk about some pretty important things and many things that people are just simply uncomfortable talking about. And so we came into this a little hesitant, wondering if everyone would join us, but everyone has resoundedly, most people have resoundedly joined us and and said, yes, let's talk about it. Let's engage with it. Let's have an honest conversation about it, and I think that's been great. We've discussed depression, stress, burnout, anxiety, worry, and even suicide, and people have come along with us the entire way.
Yeah, our goal throughout this series was to be helpful and hopeful, and we talked about it, shared in-depth testimonies from people who are going through it. We gathered extensive resources to help people who are going through it. I was so impressed with your team's work and all of the resource gathering they did. They reached out in the community. Mm-hmm. You put it together in a really great booklet that you could hand out. You also put it on the website for the church. You know, that was really great work. Shout out to you and gathering all that. But one of the best things I think we can do in helping people face mental health challenges is to strengthen the spiritual bucket so that whenever they do face it, and one thing I've learned in this series is that we all eventually kind of face it, but we can lessen the severity of it. We can sometimes stop it from happening in some ways if our spiritual bucket is strong. And so the question I have for us today is this. Is there anything you can do to strengthen yourself before facing a mental health challenge in your life? Absolutely. And one of the best places to invest our efforts to help head off these challenges in a person's life is to try and strengthen them when they are young, right?
Right.
And that's where I want to focus our study today, because this is something that, you know, in all honesty, it's just really gotten under my skin. It really bothers me what's happening to our young people today. The increase in mental health struggles among adults is important to know and deal with, right? But the most alarming trend of all is the incredible increase in mental health struggles among Gen Z. And Gen Z is basically anybody born 2000 and after. So if you're 25 or younger, it is unbelievable. According to the Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey, 50%, one out of two, 18 to 24-year-olds report dealing with anxiety and depression. That is an amazing statistic. Finally, the American, well, not finally, but the American Psychological Association reports 20% of teens, one out of five, have seriously considered suicide. And according to the Centers for Disease Control, suicide is the second leading cause of death of 14 to 18-year-old teens. According to the National Institute of Health, 32% of teenagers, 13 to 18, have an anxiety disorder. That's one out of three. The Statesman wrote an article back in December of 2023, and it was by Stuart Wilder and Dr. Thomas Young. And the title of the article was, Idaho is in a quiet youth suicide and mental illness crisis. The mental health issues of our teens are struggling with is a direct result of what's going on in our society. And most particularly, the people who've taken over our institutions. In specific, I'm talking about our public education system and then the media, you know, Hollywood and then the mass media and then the mainstream news outlets. There's some serious stuff going on. And these things have really made a huge mental health struggles among teenagers are skyrocketing. And there is a direct causal link as to why that is. There's an organization called Statista, and what they do is they just take stats from all over, they compare them, and they graph them. And mm-hmm. So you go there, you can get stats on everything. And one of the things they did is that they said, okay, 7% of U.S. adults identify as LGBT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's really interesting is then they broke it down based on traditionalists and this kind of people who were alive and, you know, prior to World War II, and then the baby boomers who were born after World War II, so from about 46 up to 64, right? Then you have Generation X, and then you have the millennials, and then you have Gen Z, right? And this is what's really, really fascinating is in 2014 is pretty static. In 2017 is pretty static based on their chart, about 3% of the population. And you go, okay, how do we go from 3% to 7.2%? Well, what happened is Gen Z now, one out of every five, 20% of them identify as LGBTQ, okay? And so that is a social contagion. When you look at the stats over the last five generations, there's something going on that has caused this. In other words, they are forcing kids to think and consider and to question their gender self-awareness, and it is causing this massive uptick. You do not see statistical anomalies like that ever unless something is pushing it in our society. And so there's a direct correlation between mental health struggles and something that our society is pushing on our young people.
I mean, yeah, let's talk about that. Does this research state what's driving this increase in mental health disorders among Gen Z?
Well, I think it has to do with two things that are going on, okay? One is in our public schools, and it's being supported by all media outlets. It's being pushed through certain departments within our universities, and that has to do with the sexualization of children through gender ideology. And it's really interesting. They said up here, and there's another report out through the NIH that says one in three teen girls now identify as LGBTQ. So one in three girls. And what's really fascinating is what girls are, especially teen girls, are basically the canary in the coal mine of what's happening. And the reason why is because teen girls tend to be the most pliable. They can be influenced the most strongly. But what's really interesting is that they also move in massive flocks or groups, okay? And the reason why you research teen girls is because you not only want to see what they're dealing with, but you want to see their, what they call the, so they carry what is called the social contagion. And that basically means, I guess an illustration of this is back in the 80s, there was not a teen girl who dressed who didn't have shoulder pads, right? So you see like fashion trends, all girls will adopt them extremely quickly. It becomes a social contagion, right? Music, very similar for teen girls, right? And so psychologists will study this in bigger terms now because they're seeing that. And that's a big deal. And one of the things that came out is it's called rapid onset gender dysphoria. It is by Michael Bailey. He is a professor of psychology at Northwestern. And he has a massive amount of research that he has published over the years. Okay, he has a long career. Highly respected researcher there. And what's interesting is he said, I have been a professor for 34 years, a researcher for over 40. I have studied controversial topics from IQ, sexual orientation, transsexualism, what we called transgenderism before 2015, to pedophilia. I have published over 100 academic articles. I am best known for studying sexual orientation, from genetic influences to childhood precursors to homosexuality to laboratory-measured sexual arousal patterns. My research has been denounced by people of all political stripes, but I have never in my entire career had an article retracted until now. And you know what that article was? Rapid onset gender dysphoria. And what he said is that, look, when you retract a scientific article, what you're doing is, in the scientific community, what you're doing is you're stigmatizing that research and that researcher. And basically what you're saying is they are persona non grata. And so what it does is it's like this bullhorn that goes through all the scientific research departments that are studying these issues, says, don't you dare publish any research that proves that this is a social contagion. And that's exactly what he did. Abigail Schreier wrote a book called Irreversible Damage, and she went into studying. What's interesting about Abigail Schreier is that she is not a conservative person at all. She considers herself a liberal Democrat, and she walks in the circles of very liberal Democrat people, right? In New York City, out in California, in the Hollywood area. These are all her peeps. She says this in the book, Irreversible Damage. She said, what was shocking to her is all of her friends came to her and said, what is happening to my teenage daughter? And what the name of it was, Irreversible Damage, the transgender craze seducing our daughters. Okay, so she actually went in and looked and said, this is unbelievable. They're trying to seduce our daughters into this, and it's extremely destructive. Following up, she's just released a new book called Bad Therapy, and what she does is she documents why kids, Gen Z, is not growing up, and that's because we have therapized parenthood. So instead of parents parenting, we're trying to push parents to be therapists with their kids. So you ask the question, what is causing the research of mental health disorders among young people? Well, it is the therapization of parenting of kids, taking away kids from the influence of their parents and trying to raise them in our public school system with psychologists and therapists and social workers. And you add to that this gender ideology, which has become more prevalent than people realize. It is in schools all over the place. And people in Idaho, whenever I talk about this, I bring it up and I'm just say, hey, be aware that your kid might be exposed to this. Be aware. We're here to help you make good decisions. You know, we don't rant and rave, and we don't get into conspiracy theories here on the Salty Pastor at Foothills. We just try to bring clarity of what's going on. I am amazed at how many parents will come to me and say, boy, I'm concerned about this. I'm so glad it's not happening in my school. And then I send them an article where it is happening in their school. And they're like, I can't believe this. I had no idea. And so I think we have to understand that this is a generated, it is a planned and intentional effort by certain groups of people in our society who are very committed to what is known as critical social justice, and that's the main stump of the Frankfurt School of Critical Theory comes from, and it has a lot to do with why kids are struggling with their mental health so much, because they are being exposed and indoctrinated with ideologies. They're taught a certain way to think that is undermining their mental health. And this is not good for kids at all. I can kind of give you some more here, all right? Liberty Unyielding did a bunch of research, and what they found is that the IQ of America's young people is falling. It's dropping, which is really interesting because in the 20th century, we're in the 21st century now, in the 20th century, what happened is it was really remarkable because in the first half up to about 1960, IQs in America were going up.
Right.
Now they're dropping. And the research basically says is because our educational system is failing to teach any skills or stimulate minds. So if you're not learning skills, if your mind isn't being stimulated and you're being inundated with all of this mental therapy stuff and all these questions about your gender identity, no wonder we are seeing a massive uptick in mental health disorders among young people. Some people have said, well, Pastor, aren't you overstating the case? Well, I'm sorry. I really hate to sound like a radical person. I'm not a radical person at all. You know, I tend to be pretty, you know, reasonable. But, you know, this critical social justice in education in our schools in the state of Idaho is very extensive, and it's been documented. School administrators in Coeur d'Alene actually manipulated an 11-year-old girl into believing she was a boy in order to undergo gender transition surgery. The parents are now suing the Coeur d'Alene School District for doing this. And I hope they say it. Now, many people say, well, you're such a red state. How could these national trends of critical gender theory and queer theory and educational programs filter into our schools? Well, the reason for that is because the curriculums that are being adopted, the educational philosophies that are being adopted, various other organizations that are a part of helping school districts do their job, like Idaho School Boards Association, and then you have the Idaho School Administrators Association. You have even a local one here called the Idaho for Business, Idaho Businesses in Support of Education, which is a nonprofit organization. All of these things are pushing these things, and it's really quite amazing to me how far it's gone, and we're seeing the uptick of mental health disorders. I believe there's a direct correlation, a direct causal link between what's happening in our kids' lives from a mental health standpoint to all of these ideologies that are being pushed on them in our public school and then supported by across the board, outside organizations and NGOs that help push it. And one of the biggest things is this notion of secularism. And it's like, well, and I'll get into that in a moment, but I have a study here from Stanford. And it said, this was a study performed by Dr. Alana M. Horowitz at Stanford's Graduate School of Education. And what she found is that the kids who do best in school are the most religious kids.
Mm.
So I find that really fascinating. The kids who do best in school, the kids who have the strongest mental health outcomes, are kids who are the most religious, the most involved in a religious community. And that could be Judaism, it could be Christianity, Roman Catholicism, you know, various different things like that. I'm not trying to say Roman Catholicism is not Christianity. So don't
clip that.
Yeah, don't clip that. Try to run with it. You know, it could be Protestant Christianity. And so it's really quite fascinating to me that these trends are something we need to look at and realize how this is influencing the mental health of our young people, even in the state of Idaho.
Mm. I mean, I think we're seeing obviously just so much of this critical social justice and gender ideology being taught in public schools.
Yes.
And I think what I want to talk about is what can families do to avoid this influence, right? Because, like, not everyone can afford to send their kid to a private Christian school, right? Like,
yeah.
That's not an option for every single family, nor is it the best thing for every single kid, right? Like, some kids will thrive in a public education, but mm-hmm. there needs to be some counter measures basically for what potentially is being taught or influenced there. So how can families avoid this influence in their kids?
Well, I think what we have to do is we kind of have to focus on this, how we got here just a little bit real quick. And then once you know that, you can look for the signs of it and be prepared for it.
Okay.
Okay. And it's really important to understand is that during 2001 to 2008, the very end of 2008, George Bush was the president of the United States. And in his administration, early on, he instituted an abstinence-only guideline for the sexual education standards for the United States of America that came out of the Department of Education. Okay? This infuriated the left. And I remember this. It was a big deal. Progressives, cultural Marxists, academic elites were very upset with this. Did everything they could try to circumvent that. Here, even here in Idaho, they're very upset with this in our schools. Now, during the Obama administration, all of these standards and guidelines were completely rewritten in 2014. 2013, they started to develop them. And then in 2014, during his second term, they were implemented. They were a radical shift from the Bush administration's. And this is when they introduced all of the gender ideology stuff, okay? And it coincided with the passing of, or leading up to, the passing of the Obergefell decision by the Supreme Court that made same-sex marriage a constitutional right, okay? So all these things politically are being driven, okay? And a lot of people are like, well, it didn't affect me. Well, whether you know or not, that decision does affect you, and it's affecting our young people now, because that was the basis on which they were able to basically fend off any court challenge to the content of these sex education guidelines. And this is where they introduced all the gender ideology and gender, what I would call propaganda, in our schools today. The Idaho School Board Association has promoted transgender student policies since 2015, when these, you know, immediately, once they were passed by the Obama administration, they were immediately adopted by the Idaho School Boards Association. This is this also the Idaho Education Association, which is the state's largest teachers union, trains educators in gender ideology, including how sexual orientation and gender identity are being recognized and accepted earlier and earlier in children. So they're trying to teach all the union members and train them to look for it and encourage it in our elementary schools now. Between 30 and 40%, I believe, of the teachers in the in Idaho are part of this union or another union. Look at Caldwell, which is a town that's a part of the Treasure Valley right here. Mm-hmm. Most of us would say Caldwell's more of a farming community, right?
Right.
And so it seems to be much more conservative than the cosmopolitan Boise, right? And it's really fascinating too. But the Caldwell School District last year, based on the policies and procedures that were sent to them by the Idaho School Board Association, had to debate whether or not they were going to allow biological males to use same locker rooms or showers and bathrooms as biological females, because they wanted to identify that way. They actually debated that, and they actually tried to slide it in, but some parents got wind of it, and they said, we're going to debate this, and the community came out in mass and said, what in the world are you thinking? Now, look, right now, there were, prior to a law that was passed last year by the state legislature, over 30 school districts in the state of Idaho had gender ideology policies in place that encouraged and supported the propagation of gender ideology, right? And that was 31. Since that law passed, it's now down to 26. But most people are not aware, Idaho's not a really massive state, right? There's not 1,000 school districts out there. There's only 100-some school districts. So it's really got a foothold here. Now, as a salty pastor, I just want to say, maybe you're a liberal person. Maybe you're not even a person of faith. You might be a liberal faith person. But let me ask you a question. Regardless of how liberal you are, do you see, can you recognize that this is an intentional attempt to sexualize children at a younger and younger age? You can't simply stand on the sidelines. We will give an account for this, not only before God, but we'll give an account in our own lives and in the outcomes, mental health outcomes of our own kids and grandkids. And this is really important to understand how serious this really is.
Yeah, I mean, I want to kind of wrap this up as we're closing today. Talk to me about what attitudes can we adopt towards the education of our children if we really want to shield them from the future mental health struggles that they seem to be facing.
Well, let me throw out a few things. You know, first and foremost, it's not fun always to tell people the truth, and people of faith in America were duped into this. It wasn't something that we just compromised or we chose to ignore. This was a intentional gaslighting approach to dupe people of faith. And this is how it happened. What they did is secularists said, we need to have a neutral space where kids could be educated without the influence of religion or ideologies. Now, there is a thing called the doctrine of non-coercion from people of faith, particularly Protestants, right? And it was almost woven into the original founding of our nation, where we said you should have freedom of religion. And our founding fathers said men should have the freedom to pursue their faith according to their own conscience. And so what that did is that really drove the denominations and many Protestant churches to simply say, look, the doctrine of non-coercion is a big deal. We do not believe people could be manipulated or coerced or just born into faith. They need to be free to examine it for themselves and make their own decision, right? And so we need to make our case and then allow people to make up their own minds. However, this was used against people of faith under the notion that a secular playing field can occur where your faith and your position will be fairly articulated up next to other positions. What they did is they ejected it, they removed it, and then the secular position basically said, we'll have a neutral place. Well, there's no such thing as a neutral place. This is the failure of secularism. It is absolutely false. All it did was open the door for cultural Marxists and leftist ideologues to come in and propagate their own agenda and ideologies. So what can you do? Your attitude should be one of extreme skepticism about what your kids are learning in a public school or some private schools as well who've gone in this direction. Okay. I don't like sounding like a radical. I don't think I'm a radical. But what is shocking is that what I'm pointing out is real. It is, we can document it. We can show the data and the research on its effect. And yet people will look at me and go, wow, you're so radical in saying this. But I'm not. I'm just being salty. I'm the salt cannot lose its saltiness. Otherwise, it's good for nothing and to be thrown out on the dung heap, in the words of my Lord and Savior Jesus. I'm just simply saying we must be aware of this. Our attitude should be skepticism. If your kids are in public education or private schools, just going to a private school doesn't insulate them from that. And the reason why you should be skeptical is it because in the end, I believe that the mental health outcome is highly influenced by you as a parent over your children. And the more you fill their spiritual bucket and the more you parent them and you're not their therapist, the stronger that they will become as kids. And that will help, you could say, vaccinate them from these poisonous ideologies that are out there. So that, in a nutshell, I think is the attitude that we need to have, is make sure that our spiritual buckets are full and that we know what to look out for.
Well, I want to encourage every one of you to think not only about strengthening yourself, but helping the people around you strengthen themselves when it comes to mental health and what we're facing these days. We want to enter into the kingdom of God, or when we enter into the kingdom of God, there's no promise that we're not going to have difficulties, right? There's no promise that you'll never have another trouble or another challenge in this life. The promise is that God will never leave us, forsake us, or abandon us. So we need to make sure we're strong in our faith and strong so that we can face these struggles when they do come, and they seem to be coming more and more regularly in our current day and age. So thank you guys so much for joining us on this amazing adventure through Weeds in My Garden, an honest conversation about mental health. Thank you, Pastor, for leading us along this journey. And I'm excited to hear as we close out with Hope Sunday here at Foothills this Sunday with your message. And next week, we'll be heading into Easter. So it's going to be an action-packed couple of weeks, and we can't wait for you to join us. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Blessings.